Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, Vic, do you think you might have ADHD?
Well, listeners keep emailing me, telling me that they think I do, so probably.
Mind you, listeners also email us saying we talk too much about your mum's feet, so what do they know?
Yeah, fair enough.
I honestly had no idea about the connection between overdrinking and ADHD until we started this podcast.
About 40% of people that have had any sort of drinking issues also apparently have ADHD.
Whenever we chat to ex-drinkers, this comes up more than you'd believe. If you have ADHD or suspect you might, or just want to learn about this link, then we would encourage you to check out the I Have ADHD podcast.
It's the place where adults with ADHD find research-based information, validation, and tons of support.
This is the best way to feel less alone and hear some of the answers to the questions you've been sitting with for too long. You'll hear detailed descriptions of what it means to have ADHD and enjoy interviews with the foremost experts in the industry so that you don't have to read those ADHD books that are collecting dust on your shelf.
Yeah. Listen to the I Have ADHD podcast and learn how ADHD affects every aspect of your life, from the boardroom to the bedroom.
In the podcast, you'll also hear about their ADHD coaching program, which is called Focused. Focused is made up of three pillars: courses, coaching, and community. It is designed to help you build your own self-improvement program and is perfect for the ADHD brain.
And you can get $50 off the course just by using the code SOBER, S-O-B-E-R. So if you're tired of feeling stuck and don't know where to start, listen to the I Have ADHD podcast.
This podcast is proudly associated with Hello Sunday Morning. Hello Sunday Morning is an Australian charity changing the world's relationship with alcohol, one Sunday at a time. Their app Daybreak helps reset drinking habits and is free for Australian residents. Find out more at hellosundaymorning.org.
Well, the kettle's boiled.
Great. Perfect timing.
Should we get started then?
I'm Victoria Vanstone.
I'm Lucy Good.
And this is Sober Awkward. Right, Lucy, over to you.
Thanks, Vic. So whatever stage you're at on your sober journey, and Vic and I are at completely different stages, you'll know that life without booze can at times feel, what do you reckon?
Awkward. Lucy and I invite you to listen to our podcast where we discuss the realities of sobriety, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the cringingly embarrassing. Our honest and open chats will help you discover what it really means to be sober.
Yes, we're here like a dodgy bottle of port from your nan's drink cabinet to take the edge off sobriety. And together we can learn how to feel the awkward and do it anyway.
Right, hello, welcome to podcast number 5, everybody. Uncanny similarities.
Hold on.
Alan.
Hold on.
What are you doing?
Alan,
what are you doing?
I'm just clearing up.
Well, you can't do it now because we've just started recording.
Would you mind? Yeah, can you do that later? Are you going to get in a huff now, are you?
I thought it was fairly obvious. I mean,
yeah, like we're going to have hoovering throughout our podcast. Oh, he's not looking very happy, Lucy.
I don't know.
Let's just carry
it's
on.
It's every bloody time.
Every week. He's like a naughty little troll, isn't he?
Lives inside the booth. The booth troll. That is what he shall be named from this day forward.
The naughty booth troll. Yes, we're calling that from now on. So why are we here? That's what I want to know.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. No, I can tell you why we're here, because we're going to do episode number 5 of our podcast, which might just throw in. It's had over 3,000 downloads in just 4 episodes.
Yeah, which is really amazing. Yeah. Getting loads of lovely emails from lots of people. Have you had a good week?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Mine was interesting. My weekend I spent at the hospital, another morning at the hospital with the kids. Thought we had little Georgie had a broken leg, but he was limping around for a couple of days, but it was absolutely nothing wrong with it.
And What time of day was that? I mean, surely these things usually happen in the middle of the night.
Yes, my old hospital visits, you know, in my drinking days, of course, were mostly in the evening, so there was a lot more going on. But it was during the day. It wasn't quite as exciting, to be honest. It was very clerical. It was just pieces of paper being stamped and us waiting for hours on end.
Oh, it's awful, isn't it? It's all part and parcel of being a mum.
Yeah, I know.
Being a parent, I should say.
Yeah. Well, at least I wasn't hungover to drive there. I imagine if I'd been drunk or hungover, drunk the night before, I wouldn't have been able to take him to the hospital. And, you know, I'm sure I probably would have done that, like stinking of booze. Imagine, you know, imagine what the doctors must think when you go in there and you've got wine breath from the night before. It's just not a good look, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to imagine because I have probably done that a few times. I mean, when you've got to take your kids to hospital, you've got to take your kids to hospital. And with my kids, it always tends to happen in the night.
Yeah.
And I mean, it might be 3 a.m. that we go in and I've stopped drinking at 10 or 11 the night before.
Mm.
So you really are running the gauntlet.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, and who wants to be in a hospital feeling like that?
Oh,
it was not nice.
No.
So, yes, so at least you managed to do it with a nice, clear head.
Yes, yeah, and the doctor was quite handsome, so that always helps.
Oh, that makes it all worth it. And the leg wasn't broken. Just add
that. I might fake a broken leg, though, next time, just so I can go and see the handsome doctor.
This is where we get our kicks now.
Yeah, sad, isn't it? Two pervy old ladies hanging around hospitals.
We've got to do something for fun.
Yeah.
Now we're sober.
Yeah, exactly.
We can drive to the hospital whenever we want.
Can I just put a clause in this podcast? Say, do not go and hang around hospitals and then blame us because we'll get in trouble.
Looking for sexy doctors.
I think you've got a funny story for us today, Lucy, about a similar thing about, you know, being humiliated for doing something you shouldn't be doing. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, no, I was just thinking about what to say and, you know, about how my week went. And I've kind of got a high and a low point. And like everything at the moment for me, every point in my life, I managed to bring it back to this sobriety journey that I'm on. So shall I start with my high? I think I will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been on this podcast now telling everybody I'm 6 months sober and just telling everybody in general and anyone who will listen 6 months. And I suddenly thought, hey, you know, I reckon that I am over that now. I must be coming up to 7 or 7 and something. So I had a look at my app on my phone called I'm Done Drinking, and I'm over 8 months.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I'm feeling, not only am I feeling really good that I'm over 8 months, but I feel really good that I'm at that point where I'm not counting the minutes.
Yeah. Well done. That's so good. So good to check in on that and see how you're doing. And it is good to know that you're not counting anymore because it's, you know, it shows progress, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think
you're not so aware of it.
Exactly right. I put something on your group because I wanted to share my win with some people on your Facebook group. And I said to people that I'm not counting because I'm not looking for a finishing point. But some people do dry July or whatever, a month, 3 months, a year. And I think that's great. But for me, this is a lifestyle choice. So there's no point in counting all the time. But it is really nice to refer to that app and have a look and see how well you're doing, and whether it's just out of interest or if you're having a hard time.
Yeah, just to give yourself a little pat on the back every now and again.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Just what was the downer? Come on.
Okay, yeah. Look, the downer. I am going to share this one. Went to the gym. I go to the gym about 5 times a week. Been going to the same gym for several years. And went in this week and I got chucked out.
To be honest, nothing surprises me.
I thought it was quite rebellious of me.
Yeah,
actually.
What did you get chucked out for?
Talking too loudly on the phone.
That is so weird. Why was it? How loudly?
Look, you know what I'm like.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty
loud.
I mean, Alan has to make sure my microphone's suitably set up so I don't burst people's eardrums with my laugh. And I was laughing on the phone conversation. But look, I know there'll be people listening who are thinking, yeah, totally get that. She was one of those really annoying people who talks on the phone at the gym. And I get that. And I don't think I should have been doing it. But somebody called me and I just thought I'd take the call. And I must have been talking exceptionally loudly. And I had a lady come over and very politely asked me to leave and finish my phone call outside.
What did she say? Get the fuck out of here.
Well, she may as well have. I was so humiliated.
Oh, no, it's embarrassing.
I had to kind of do the walk of shame with my head hung low.
Oh, no.
But I did. I went out, finished my phone call, and then I had to walk back in again and finish my workout, which I did, brave old me. But the reason I thought I'd bring it up in this podcast today is because it's actually quite relevant to what we're talking about, because I thought about this whole situation for the rest of the day. And you know, honestly, I still think about it really now, a few days later.
Because you felt humiliated, like embarrassed by being thrown out of the gym.
I mean, it really was nothing.
Yeah,
it's
not even a big deal, really, is it? It's not a big deal.
And I might just add that there was only one other person in there.
Right, so it's nothing even to be ashamed about. It's just like a little tiny thing.
She was really polite and I said, I'm so sorry. I had no idea I was being so loud. Anyway, I thought, I sort of delved into it a bit more because it was about 3 PM. Now, usually what I would do is head home, pass the bottle out, grab a bottle of wine and drink that because that would hide those awkward feelings I was feeling.
So you'd numb yourself out to deal with the shame and embarrassment of you having a feeling about something.
Exactly right. Yes. And I didn't do that, Vic. I want a pat on the back for that. I didn't.
You didn't go home and put needles in your eyeballs or anything, did you, instead?
No, I was tempted, but I didn't. No, I just filled myself with self-loathing and just I'm such an awful person. I can never go back to that gym again.
Oh, dear.
Of course, I've been back and it was absolutely fine. But the reality is I'm super sensitive and I'm an empath. And you're nodding, Vic, because you're both of those things, aren't you?
I've realised in sobriety that I am exactly both of those things, extremely oversensitive and an empath. Yeah. So I'm soaking everything up in the room at all times. And that's a lot of responsibility for anybody. Yeah. It sort of leads us on to our topic, doesn't
it? Exactly. And that's why I thought I'd mention it, because it's a couple of personality traits that I've got that made me find it so hard to deal with such a really irrelevant situation.
Yeah.
But just before we go on to the reason, you know, why we're talking about what we're talking about, the other thing that it made me feel, I realised, was it reminded me of what it was like those many times that I was very politely but firmly asked to leave clubs, pubs and bars over the last 25 years.
Funerals. Yeah.
I mean, it was exactly the same feeling of, I had no idea. I was upsetting people. I was just enjoying myself, chatting on the phone to my friend or getting absolutely annihilated in a bar.
Yeah.
So it definitely brought that feeling back for me. And that was a horrible, horrible one to feel.
So you had like a sober hangover, basically, Lucy. You had a situation that arose that made you feel sort of anxious, and so it caused like a sober hangover, I guess.
It did.
Yeah, so
it
you did. Felt the same sort of feelings of shame and anxiety. Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah, and I'm talking about a gym which is a really chilled out gym. I mean, I'm the youngest person there, that's why I go. It's not pretentious at all. I'll give you an idea
is everyone?
They're old. I went down there about a couple of years ago, drove down there in the winter, first thing in the morning, pulled up in the car park, realised I still had my slippers on.
Oh, like everyone else in there.
I just thought, did me workout in my slippers and no one blinked, no one cared. That's the kind of gym it is. Why I was worried, I don't know.
It's because I've
got certain personality traits that I do find excruciatingly hard to deal with.
Yeah.
And so for the last 25 years, I've dealt with them by masking them and numbing them out with alcohol. And that's what we're talking about today, aren't we, Vic?
Yeah, uncanny similarities.
Yeah. So, I mean, many people have got an idea of what a typical alcoholic looks like or what the typical behaviours of an alcoholic are. I mean, you've only got to look at the way that we tell you we've behaved in the past. And these misconceptions can lead some people to believe that only certain types of people can suffer from alcoholism, or that alcoholism is somehow a choice or a lack of self-control or good decision-making. Such misunderstandings may help perpetuate dangerous stereotypes about alcoholism or make it less likely that a person who needs help gets the support they deserve. And the reality is that anyone can suffer from alcoholism. It doesn't discriminate. So no matter where you come from, what you do, your personality type or your family history, or if your life is going to plan or not, there is a chance that at some point you may lean on booze to get through tough times.
One of the main reasons we do this podcast is to make people aware that anyone could have a destructive relationship with booze and it might be hiding in plain sight. We hope that by being open with our own issues, it might make you stop and think before it bites you on the bum. Lucy and I disappeared off the radar because we were not your typical drinkers. We hid the fact we were struggling because we couldn't admit the truth that alcohol was really making us feel a bit crap. But now, since we've met and been honest about it, we've discovered that our drinking patterns and our lives are very, very similar. Even though we seemed happy and content and functional on the outside, on the inside, we were both desperate for help. And now we're in recovery, we want to learn all the reasons why we got to the point of needing help to stop. And it got us wondering why we both started using alcohol in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, was it because we were shy or introvert and in need of a crutch? Or were we desperate to please others, so followed the crowd? And could we have chosen better ways to cope with our own intricate personalities rather than getting wasted?
Today, we're going to discuss our characters and unpack if we were more prone to drink because we could not accept who we are intrinsically as humans. Were we drowning out our true personalities with booze because we didn't accept ourselves? I wonder, Lucy, is there a chance we could have recognised our problems earlier if we'd had better life coping tools from the start?
Yeah, look, I think about it a lot too. Could we have learnt to embrace our particular character traits instead of drinking them away? And as you may have gathered, listeners, Vic and I are kind of fascinated by sobriety. We could and we do talk about it for hours on end. And you might be surprised to know that we've only known each other for 254 days. Did you know that, Vic? 254 days.
Yeah, I did know that. It feels like a bloody lifetime. Carry on.
And you might be surprised to know that's because I got sober 3 days after meeting Vic. And that's a story for another day as to how that happened. Anyway, the sober app on my phone counts down not only how many days I haven't drunk for, but how long I've known Vic for.
It's funny you mention that, Lucy, because I've got an app on my phone that counts down towards the end of our friendship.
Oh, it might be sooner than you think.
It's running out, I can tell you. It's like a ticking time bomb.
Oh, I'll have to have a sneak look at that when you next go to the toilet.
You're getting nowhere near it.
Look, I mentioned this because in the relatively short time we've realised that we have an almost scary amount of personality traits in common, good and bad, I might add. And then taking it a step further, as we always do, we realise that many of them are linked to the reasons that we drank so much bloody booze.
And today I did discover actually that Lucy doesn't like HP on her eggs, which I find really bizarre. So that is one point where we are not similar, but everything else are exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was a shocking revelation.
Yeah, who doesn't
wasn't
have
it?
HP sauce on their eggs?
No, anyway. I think you're weird.
Anyway, what we want you to take away from our podcast today are some real light bulb moments, the ones that say, yes, that could be the reason I drink so much, as well as understanding how and why certain temperaments are more likely to reach for the tequila than others. We hope that by talking honestly and openly about our own drinking dramas, that you will be able to pinpoint similarities in yours. Of course, we plan on scaring you into stopping drinking by sharing tales of our undignified downward slopes. But don't panic. We always end in a high. And we want to share with you our own coping mechanisms to swap out booze for healthier and more sustainable ways to deal with the wonderful person that you are.
Yep, that's what we're going to do today. And I suppose we have to start with this awkward question of what similar traits do we have that we believe also fueled our drinking? And we have mentioned it in our introduction, but again, we're talking about us. This is really about us, this podcast, isn't it?
I apologise if this doesn't cover everybody's personality traits. It'd be impossible to cover everybody, but I hope you can take something away from our own stories.
Yeah, it might even be that, you know, one of these traits that we bring up that we've got in common that we also believe caused us to drink a lot might resonate, or it might be that none of them do or loads of them. But this is just hopefully going to help you to maybe look at your own and say, yeah, that could be because I'm like that. That's one of the reasons that I like to have a drink.
Yeah. And hopefully that you'll accept that reason and go, actually, can I change? Yeah. Which is what we've done, really, isn't
it? Exactly. And that's what we're going to go into, as well as sharing our awful, lots of awful, horrible things about ourselves.
We know the listeners love to hear our horrible, debaucherous tales of drunken misconduct.
Yeah. If you ever want to feel good, just listen to us.
really want to reach the lows of depravity, then tune in.
Yeah, and if you resonate too much, then you probably need to stop drinking.
You probably need help. Yeah, we laugh, but, you know, if we didn't laugh, we'd probably cry a lot.
We do cry quite a lot
Yeah,
now,
sometimes in private.
But look, our list, we usually sort of decide what we're going to talk about and then we make our own little lists of what we want to say. But because of the nature of this podcast, we're talking about our similarities. We made two lists, didn't we? And they were almost identical.
They're the same, yeah.
So look, why don't you start, Vic? Just tell us maybe the ones that really pop out. Your traits that you have had when in your drinking days that you think made you reach for a drink more than you should have.
Well, I think I grew up with three elder siblings. So I was very easily led. I wanted to join the party. I remember we've talked about that before on the podcast, which meant I had a very rebellious nature. I just wanted to grow up before my time. And my way of doing that was to reach for alcohol. So one of my intrinsic personality traits was to rebel against the norm from a very, very young age. So, of course, that led to me wanting to impress my peers because I wanted to impress my brothers and sisters and be like, look, I can do this. So, of course, impressing your peers when you're a teenager, the only thing you're going to do is reach for a bevy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that's what I did, yeah.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
about you?
Look, I think maybe the first one that I'd like to bring up is shyness.
Yeah.
That's a really big one for me. And it's one that I'm actually dealing with all these months into sobriety now and just finding social situations quite awkward. I find it really funny that you and I tell people that we're shy because I don't think we come across like that
at
all.
We're not shy in this room when we're together, but perhaps we're more introverted than we realised.
Yeah. I've been on TV, on the morning show and stuff like that, and I can do things like that, but it's just certain social situations that sometimes I find really difficult. I find them difficult now, and looking back to when I was 15, I did. So I can remember taking my first drink at around the age of 14 and or 15, and it really was like taking a magic pill because it took away all my inhibitions and I was able to communicate with people instead of being in this really socially awkward place where I could barely say a word.
So you went from being totally shy to then becoming a completely different person after you'd taken that drink.
Yeah, yeah, totally I did. And so much so that I can remember when I was young, I mean, we used to go into the pubs when we were about 15 years old in England. It was all quite different, wasn't it, then? Yeah. And just going
fake
around.
Fake IDs.
Yeah, even if they even bothered looking.
Yeah.
They were the days, Vic.
Those are the good old days. Packet of Marlboro Lights in your pocket.
Not like that anymore, no. Is it? we shouldn't be looking back. With
no, we're reminiscing. Yeah.
That was the
terrible times.
That was the beginning of the night.
Yes, that was the good bit.
No, I do remember I had my first relationship. Lovely, lovely guy. God bless his soul, because unfortunately he died at the beginning of this year. But my first ever boyfriend, Adrian, who I went out with for 4 years, always felt I was punching above my weight. But I can remember I was so nervous when I went to see him that I used to get a little bottle of neat whiskey and would drink that before I could actually bring myself to go and see him or to walk through the pub door or to go into someone's house. Looking back, that was just terrible. But it was my magic pill that allowed me to get out there and socialise. And then as the years went on, I used that as a crutch to socialise. So now I've stopped drinking and we'll go into this, you know, what happens and how you deal with these problems when you stop drinking. I've almost reverted back to being 15 again. And we had this conversation in the week, so I've been struggling this week. So for me, my trait that, and I think a lot of people will feel this who are listening, my main one was shyness and being an introvert. That was what made me pick up a drink.
Yeah, that is a huge one. I do really relate with that, Lucy, because I think when I was that age, when I was 14 or 15, something that came up for me was that, all the other girls in school were kissing boys and going to all these different bases and things. And I wasn't very comfortable with sex or anything at that age, but everybody else seemed to be doing it. And I felt like perhaps that was something that I should be doing as well. And I used to drink, I used to have a couple of pints, steal a bottle of wine out of the garage, do whatever I could. And it made me, in a very similar way to you, it made me more accessible to boys. It made my underwear much more accessible to boys. But it made me as a person like capable of interacting with boys and having, having snogs behind the bike sheds and all that sort of thing. Because actually, I don't think I was comfortable with those things. I wasn't ready to do anything with boys, but I felt that peer pressure because I wanted to impress, and that whole thing of me being rebellious. I felt like it was something I had to do, even though I was probably too young. So, of course, I just drank through it.
Yeah.
So really, again, Lucy, I think I was probably shy too. And I've never really looked at that. I've never really looked at me pouring alcohol on myself, like to make myself come alive, which I guess I did for throughout most of my youth,
yeah,
which I'm not happy that I did. But, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. I just didn't know how. Another way of making myself more confident.
Yeah, and I mean, that brings us to another point we've got in here, which I think you made this one first of all, which is a low self-esteem. I mean, there is nothing like a drink to suddenly make you feel really confident in yourself if you've got low self-esteem. And if you're unhappy with your looks, as we so often are as we grow up, especially as women, and certainly nowadays for our poor children growing up in this Instagram crazy world, or should I say Snapchat,
I can't keep up with it all.
But they, you know, a lot of them are suffering from low self-esteem, and alcohol is so accessible to them. So that's another one, isn't it? And that leads on really from that, what you're saying, you were drinking to put yourself through what you honestly, your true self, found a really uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, and I'll probably still be a virgin now, to be honest, if I hadn't started drinking.
Are you not?
No, I've had 3 children. No, they weren't immaculate conceptions.
It's just I do bow down to you often because you are my guru. So I wondered. That
on your
was
knees,
all.
Lucy. I don't mind when you bow down to me occasionally.
Well, I would, but there's not enough room.
There's not enough room. we'll put a picture on Instagram of the size of our little studio here.
It is
thanks
funny.
To Alan, the sound
but at
guy.
at least we've got a nice clean floor.
Yeah, he's hoovered.
What are some others?
So the one that came up for you, I think, was depression because you've suffered a bit from depression in the past. Is that right?
Yeah. I suffered a lot. I mean, I suffered from clinical depression for about the last 5-6 years, but on and off a lot, you know, before that, going back probably about 10-15 years, but not really identifying what it was. Yeah, I felt really depressed. That was caused through a number of reasons, but one of which is having a sort of a chronic disease that I struggle with on a daily basis, and that sort of is the prognosis is it's not going to get any better. So that brought on a depression in me, and then I tried to deal with that by drinking.
Yeah, so obvious lean to, isn't it? Just to take the edge off at night and just go, actually, I don't want to think about this anymore. I'm going to drink so that I don't have to think about this problem, and hopefully drinking will make me feel better.
Yeah.
And which also, isn't the case, of
and
course.
And also it will make me feel better. And, you know, I don't really care about my future because I was thinking it didn't look good. I mean, I don't feel like that now. I've managed to deal with it. When you get quite ill, it's like going through a grieving process of not being able to accept it, fighting it, and then finally accepting it. And then you go through all the stuff. And anyway, I didn't go through it as I should. I drank my way through it.
Yeah.
And unbeknown to me, although I did know, we all know alcohol's a depressant.
Yeah.
But it made me feel good. I like thought maybe they've got it wrong somewhere down the line, because the only thing that actually makes me feel good is a drink.
Well, that is really because it makes you forget all of the problems in your life. So therefore it feels good
at the time.
Because everything else is gone, but then it's doubly worse the next day, which goes on to what I experienced, a similar thing, which was anxiety.
Yeah.
I became very, very anxious after drinking due to taking too many recreational drugs in the 90s as well. I had a bit of a situation then which led to a lot of anxiety, which resurfaced again when I became a parent. So all of these things are all personality traits that have developed for certain reasons. It doesn't really matter why you have them or who you are.
Yeah.
They're just things that you are intrinsically as a human that definitely relate to how you drink. So Lucy drank for depression. I drank for anxiety because of shy. You said you're a perfectionist as well, Lucy.
Oh, yeah, that's a really big one, And I think a lot of people who I spoke to, when I've been to some of your sober meetups, Vicky, and I speak to people, perfectionism comes up a lot. I mean, none of us can be perfect. We're trying to do something that's impossible. So she with the, what does it say on your t-shirt?
Let that shit go.
Let that shit go. It's got on her t-shirt. We take a photo of it.
I think I will let that shit go maybe after we'll that curry you had earlier.
Yeah, well, let's finish up here as quick as we can. I don't want to be a don't really want to be a part of that.
Sorry.
But yeah, well, you may be perfect in every way.
Yes, I'm glad we got that clear.
But yeah, I mean, you who wants to be perfect? It's boring. You're boring.
Yeah, okay, I don't mind.
But yeah, if you're trying to reach something that is impossible to reach and you never get there, you're going to constantly be beating yourself up, and that's not a good thing. Yeah. And so you drink to make yourself feel better. So yeah, we've got quite a few in there. Rebellious nature, people pleasing. We are such people pleasing.
Oh, that's the biggest one ever, that people pleasing one. I mean, that for me is, have been my entire life, has been trying to make everybody else happy.
Yeah.
And it's a huge responsibility, I've realised since giving up drinking, that you can't make everybody happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Oh, totally. Yeah. Because we even now we do that, don't we? Even as we're,
yeah.
You know, if we were drinking, we knew that we would make people laugh. And we knew we'd give people an entertaining evening. So we were ticking our people pleaser box by doing that.
Yeah.
There's so many other ways that we can please people. And later on, we will talk about how we use things like our people pleasing, our perfectionism, our shyness, our worrying natures, because I worry all the time. That's another one of my traits. But how we use them in a better way in our wonderful sober lives.
Well, I definitely am still a people pleaser now, because I'll tell you a perfect example of this week was that you don't just unlearn everything.
No.
I still have this thing where I need to please people, and I just do it in different ways now. But there was something on a magazine this week. It was on Instagram, and they'd done a shot of an article, and it was about a woman and her daughter, and it was about the daughter not wanting to do the cross country, and the mum said, "I've allowed her to skip it." And obviously my comment underneath was, I think skipping it's a bit mean, making her skip it because she'll get the rope tangled around her legs. And as I wrote it, I was like, yes, score. That is a really good punchline. And it made me feel really happy, even though I know that, like, that is my own sense of humour and that I cannot see the other people on the end of that comment laughing or anything. Like, still I have that need even to make people laugh that I can't even see.
Yeah.
So it's totally irrational.
Yeah, but
it's something in me has that you know, passion to make people I don't know happy. And that is a problem for me, I think.
Well, I don't know if it's so much a problem. Did you get many responses?
No, but I kept checking. Please tell me I'm funny. Well, no, please tell me I'm funny.
I'm just going to put it out there. I found that quite funny.
Okay, good.
But then, you know, I do. I love all your jokes. I think it's a habit now.
But then I don't get any satisfaction from that. Like, I don't know why. Like, it's just, we'll talk a bit more about that. Yeah. Why is, I think,
yeah, but it was a really good point that you made, that these things, they don't go when you become sober. It's about you. And I think it's a good thing to want to help people. I mean, that's what we're doing here. Pleasing people, being a people pleaser is not necessarily about making people laugh. It can be about making people feel better in some way and better themselves. And that's what we're trying to do here. So this is kind of one way that we're feeding our people-pleasing personality trait by doing this podcast. Yes. It's all completely about us.
Show us the love.
Yeah. As many comments as you like this
week. Wait a second, Lucy. What is that noise? He's at it again. Alan, what are you doing? What are you doing? Can't eat crisps right now.
God, we're going to have to keep going, because otherwise,
carry on.
All right, okay. Well, now I've lost my train of thought, because I wonder what flavour they are.
Yeah. I hope they're not Walkers.
Oh, I do love a
smoky bacon.
By the way, you should have said chips.
Oh, yeah, chips. Sorry, chips. He's eating a packet of chips. Right chips, next to
hot,
us on
not
the floor.
Hot chips.
Nibbling away.
Yeah, making crumbs on the carpet.
The troll, what did you call him?
The booth troll.
The booth troll's having a snack. Right, carry on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Where were we? Okay, so let's talk about the result of what happened to us with these personality traits that we've just mentioned, when we just kept drinking through them instead of dealing with the reality of how we should have handled them in our life. Because there's nothing wrong with any of them. They're things that a lot of people have. Yeah,
natural traits.
But not for us. We couldn't do it. We're too weak. So we just picked up a drink to deal with it. So go on. Do you want to sort of start? Because you've got some really good ones here.
Well, yeah, obviously the rebellious people pleaser, we've referred to that already. Alcohol went hand in hand with that. So obviously that was something I was going to turn to. My main one, of course, the result of me being a drinker and not coping with myself was when I became a mother, and I got anxiety, and I found the whole thing so bloody overwhelming. Like, I'd had no training what it was going to be like, and I found it quite boring, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know, I loved that baby more than anything in my life, But for me, alcohol became an escape and a relief from the mundanity of being a new mum. So, of course, I went out weekends and I just, you know, I had an escape, which was to drink. So,
and I just want to wonder, because you've put here hosed down like an elephant.
Yes. So,
and I was going to ask you before what that meant, but I thought, I'll wait and just see what comes out.
Oh, I used to work in a zoo.
Oh, you hosed down an elephant.
My husband once, when I got, one of the first times I went out and got pissed after having the baby. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? Please don't tell anyone, listeners, that I did that a lot. But yeah, I'm just being honest. But yeah, my husband, I'd been sick and in my handbag. It had overflowed in the taxi. Oh. I was in a lovely sequin dress and I came in. I fell. I was leaning against the front door. And as he opened at the front door, I sort of collapsed onto the floor just with my legs sticking out like the Wicked Witch of the West. Yeah, it was a bad look. And he had to sort of drag me like a dead body into the bathroom and dump me in the bath and hose me down with the shower, where I was like gibbering like an alien at him, saying, "Can I hold the baby? Let me wake the baby up to hold." He was like, "Get into bed."
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, just a horrible total mess.
And I listened to that with sadness. I mean, there is a comic side to
it. I know, it's just what we say. I mean, you know, it is funny, but it is not a good look, really, is it?
No, it's not a good look. But it's something to remember to keep you on that sober path.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, one of the things that I noticed that was really going wrong when I was drinking through everything was that I use drink. I've built my own business, which I've had for 5 years, and it's going along nicely now after 5 years and supporting myself and my small family of two children. But getting there was such hard work, and I was, was contracting, I was working part-time, I was Uber driving, I was bringing up my kids, and I was starting this business, and it was exhausting. And of course, everything had to be absolutely perfect. And in order to get the business off the ground, I had to be an extrovert, putting myself out there, shouting about what I was doing, because it's an online business. beanstalkmums.com.au.
Yes, quick mention.
Might just
there.
Put it out there. Just a space for single mums if you want some happiness.
Yeah, it's amazing.
In your life. But in order to do it, I had to really get out there, PR myself. And it wasn't natural for me because I'm shy and I'm an introvert and I'm a worrier. So putting myself out there was really difficult. But I could do it if I had a drink.
Yeah.
So I'd work really, really long hours, but that was fueled by alcohol. If I'm going to be honest, and this is, you know, I'm just going to, little disclaimer, I'm not saying that you should drink, but I actually probably think I couldn't have done what I did sometimes without drinking, because I haven't got the nature of putting myself out there.
Right.
I do another podcast, which I do on my own for my business, and I have on expert guests. So it's just me interviewing the guest, and I've done nearly 80 episodes of that. But for some of them, I had to have a drink before I spoke to the expert guest. And
just to help with your nerves, do you think? Is that how you sort of put it in your brain? It was like, I can have a drink now to help with my nerves. I need to be like on form now. So otherwise I'm going to be speak too quickly. You wanted it to relax? Or what was your reason when you had that drink?
It wasn't to help with my nerves, Vic. I mean, I did feel nervous and it did help with my nerves. But the reason for having it was so that I could come across as a different person to who I was.
Gosh,
I wasn't confident in the person
insightful.
I was.
That is insightful.
Yeah, I needed to have a drink
that's
to turn into somebody else.
Yes.
Because I needed to perform like an extrovert, like I was really confident in what I was telling them or talking to them about, and I didn't feel it inside. So I needed a drink to do that. So ultimately, by doing that, I became more and more hooked on drinking, because I was using it not like, more like you, Vicky, you were more of a going out and socializing drinker out in bars and pubs, but I was at the beginning, but then it became more sinister when I was drinking more at home, when I was working. It was, every time I worked, every time I cooked dinner, every time I did anything, I had a drink.
Yes, you couldn't escape from it. It's just constant.
I couldn't. It really exacerbated my drinking a lot. And so, of course, and the other one, that the result of drinking through these character traits is, of course, that I created a lot more problems around my depression, because unbeknown to me, I was making it worse and worse and worse, until I got to the point where I was, you know, I was pretty much getting close to rock bottom. And so close that I still couldn't see that the problem was the drink.
Isn't that amazing that you didn't correlate the two at that time?
No, I didn't. I suppose I didn't even when I gave up. I mentioned it last week, and you've spoken to him, haven't you? William Porter.
Yes, yes.
He wrote Alcohol Explained, and reading that book made me actually, 8 months into sobriety, only now have I accepted that, yes, it is a depressant. It wasn't helping me.
Gosh, isn't it funny? You just live for those short-term highs. Again, we talk about that a lot, like those short-term alcohol highs that make you feel good for a very short-lived moment. But the fallout from that is huge. And it can last, for me, those anxiety attacks that I had on a Sunday, they would last throughout the whole week for me. And it wouldn't be until the Friday night where I'd probably drink to stop the anxiety and start it all again. So it was just actually a bit like a high that I was just spent a week, a 5 minute high that I probably spent a week recovering from and then started it again. Yeah, it is madness.
So you had a characteristic, which was that you felt anxious. And in order to deal with that, you would drink. And that was actually making you feel worse. And it's not until you get sober that you can recognize that it wasn't working for you and it wasn't serving you. Suddenly it becomes as clear as day, doesn't it? But it does take a long time.
Yeah, but it's that social thing, isn't it? It's that social norm that, like, I can't not do this. I have to do this. So I've got to keep doing it because otherwise I'm going to be the odd one out. So I just kept doing it. Because I'm a people pleaser, I didn't want to be the odd one out.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone wanted you there so you could make them laugh by being the most drunk.
I wanted to fulfill my role as, you know, the funny person with the funny lines that did the moonwalk or whatever stupid dance move I was doing on that day. The podium, which I'll tell you what the podium is very quickly. The podium is not me dancing on the podium. The podium was me being a podium and people climbing up onto my back. So I'd be like on all fours and I'd be covered in disco dirt the next day because all my clothes would be completely ruined because I'd allowed an entire nightclub of people to dance on my back.
How odd.
I know. The podium. I'd be like, Vic's doing the podium. Yeah, and there I was crawling around. On you get.
And being an empath, I'm thinking, why didn't those people think they might hurt her?
Nobody cared. They just wanted to dance on my back.
And you were just there on all fours with people. Yeah. I mean, that's almost...
I had footprints on my back the next morning.
That makes me sad as well. It makes me laugh and it makes me sad. I'm feeling a real, real range of emotions with these stories.
I just thought it was funny. Like, I know it sounds mental.
It was funny.
I don't do the podium anymore, let's just say that.
I don't know, maybe we'll have a go.
Maybe we'll have a go in here. Alan can get on my back. I'll ride around.
We take a photo.
Come on, Alan. On your hop.
So this moves us really nicely on because the next thing we're going to talk about here is how we coped with those characteristics in sobriety. So how the stupid things we were doing to manage our personality traits. When we became sober, how did we deal with it? And it's really good because the first thing I've got here, what you wrote down, Vic, is that you wrote a list of all the bad things you'd ever done. And I'm imagining that the podium and the elephant hose.
No, neither of them were on there.
Because there were so many
other ones. I mean, they're just the tip of the iceberg.
You couldn't fit them on the list.
No, I couldn't fit them on the list. There's a lot worse things than that. So one of the first things I did when I decided to give up drinking was to make a list of all the terrible things that I'd done. So just all the really embarrassing things, the things that, you know, the terrible one-night stands and just the awful behaviour that I did. And then I sat down with that list. I can tell you it was worse than Santa's naughty list. It was, you know, terrible. And I looked at the list and I read it back and then I looked at each little thing, each little sentence, and I wrote not okay next to it. So it was really clear that I'd done all these things, and looking back and reading that list back, I realised that none of the things that I'd been doing were okay. It was for everybody else to be entertained rather than myself, and I was putting myself at risk. I'd lost myself in this character that I'd become, in these made-up characteristics, if you like. So when I read that list back to myself, I realised that the person looking back at me from that piece of paper was a complete raving lunatic banshee. Mm. It wasn't me.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, it's still a little bit, yeah. Apart from some things on there were okay.
It was quite funny watching you eat your Thai curry tonight since you asked for it. Super duper hot, she said in a confident voice. She did look like a lunatic banshee eating that, I have to say.
With my eyes bulging out of my head.
You asked for it hot, dear.
Oh, yeah, I regret that.
No, but it is. That's a really serious point if you put it. My life at the moment is punctuated with really shameful memories.
Yes, a lot, and I had a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah, and I often think I should write a list.
Yeah.
Just in case as well, if I weakened in my sobriety, just look at that list.
Yeah, because it was a really eye-opener. It was a massive eye-opener for me to realise that all of the behaviour that I'd had was bad for me. And it was funny for everybody else, but it was bad for me. I mean, as listeners, you can do this. Make a list of all of those things and then read it through and write not okay next to it, because it's a very satisfying thing and it makes you realise that actually none of those things had any benefit for you. I never walked away with anything from anything with my head held high. I was always had my head bowed in shame with a hood on the next day, feeling terrible shame and guilt. Whereas now I don't have that. I do have my head held high because I know what I'm doing and I know what I'm doing. I'm present and I'm aware, which is a huge, huge difference. What about you?
Yeah, look, well, we're looking at, how we coped with our characteristics in sobriety. And I think the most important one for me that I'd like to share, in the hope that others out there might try to do it as well, and their journey to it might be different, but is to accept yourself for what you are, all these characteristics, which you probably look as quite negative because they're causing you to pick up a drink. Instead, they are your characteristics. They're what makes up you. So try and accept them. And I just want to bring up something that happened when I very first met Vic. It was in a coffee shop. I might have mentioned this before.
Yeah, I think
it's
did,
a big
yeah.
But it was a big moment. It was a changing point. I became sober 3 days later.
I can't remember it, Lucy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you can, because I keep going on about it. Stop pretending it doesn't mean anything to you.
I think about it all the time.
Oh, don't say it like that. I don't know if I want to share it now.
I'm rubbing my legs, the top of my legs.
Oh, no, not that again. No. Oh, God. I've lost my train of thought.
Sorry,
no. Lucy. No, we met up in a coffee shop and I just remember there was a bit of a light bulb moment for me when we were having a bowl of porridge. I mean, that's become a little thing for us, hasn't it? Our porridge dates.
Porridge and coffee dates.
Yeah, which we love. Vic was having a bowl of porridge in front of her. Nice hot cup of tea, I think you had. And you said, "This is me. Porridge and tea." Really confidently, really happily. And I thought, this is, you've got it. You've just accepted who you are now and it isn't that person, that place where I was still in that really dark place because I was drinking at the time. So acceptance.
Yeah.
And that can be done for some people listening. They might be able to work through that on their own, I think. But I mean, other people need help.
Well, mine didn't used to be porridge and coffee. It used to be cocaine and beer.
Yeah.
So it just shows you how much you can change.
It does show.
I mean,
how
I've
much
gone from that
change.
To something else.
Like, and I mean, I understand that porridge is a really good energy food, so it's kind of the same.
Yeah, similar. Similar. Not. I don't get a come down with porridge though.
No.
Just a little bit of a tummy.
And I was going to say you don't get a flower in your cocaine, but that kind of just that could go on that joke because there maybe was flour in the cocaine.
Yeah, probably was. I was buying it off some dodgy guy around the back of the bike shed.
We were so drunk, they'd sell us anything.
Yeah.
But no, where we have our porridge, they do put real flowers in the...
Yes, it's
in
posh
porridge. So, I mean, who would not want that?
It's posh
porridge. I can't think of anything better. I mean, we pay through the nose for it. Yeah. It's probably more than coke.
It's $50 a kilo. Oh dear.
Anyway, accepting yourself and what you are, and it doesn't have to be this exciting, mad woman. It can be somebody who's sitting in a very content manner at a coffee shop with a lovely cup of tea.
And actually, that's a lot cooler than being like the crazy people that we used to be. So it's actually, you want to have, you need that want as well. You want to change. So that's a really important one, is that, you know, you can be a certain way, but if you want to be another way, that is a possibility. Like, something that therapy taught me was that people are capable of change. I changed hugely, and we'll talk about a little bit about that later. But I think one of my main ones there is, like, was the release for me, was letting go of other people's opinions.
Yeah.
That was the hugest thing that I've ever dealt with in my life, was just going, actually, I can't control what other people think about me in any situation. So me, in those people-pleaser situations, whether people were happy or not, I couldn't read inside their brains. I just thought I was doing something to make other people happy, whereas in fact, maybe I wasn't. Mm. Maybe I wasn't making people happy, and I certainly wasn't making myself happy. So the release that sobriety and with learning about it, that I don't actually now care what people think about me, is you know, it's a completely different person and it takes a huge amount of stress off my shoulders.
Yeah. And were you one of those people who, if you went out for the night with a group of people, if you didn't feel the vibe was quite good enough, you felt it was your job to
yeah, because of the empath it. Thing. Yeah, I'm taking exactly. responsibility for everybody's night being fun. Now imagine that, a room full of 100 people. I'm thinking it's my job to make everybody in that room happy. That's how I felt all the time. And I felt that I had to perform for people. And it was huge for me. So obviously I'm going to drink through that because it's so much pressure. I mean, and it's wasted so much mental energy throughout my life. I mean, I could have spent that energy doing something much more productive than worrying what people's going on in other people's brains, because it's a fucking waste of time.
I mean, I suppose we do still do it, but we do it within we might think about it, but then we let it go.
Yes, letting it go.
Yeah, that's a huge
Let
one.
That shit go. There you go. There's my T-shirt.
Let that shit go. Yeah. Perfect T-shirt. We get everything right with this.
Yeah.
Look, some other ways that I found to cope that I've put here, I just wanted to bring up, was if you are shy like me and you're struggling with your social situations, then one thing I do find is find a group of like-minded people, people who are also trying not to drink. That really helps. Maybe it's AA, maybe it's just a local sober curious group. But also, I mean, funny thing that I've just started doing is I now volunteer at the Lifeline shop, my local Lifeline shop. I love it in there. I love all the old dears. And it just gives me a way to get out and to converse with people, but with purpose.
Yeah.
Where it's not just socialising. I haven't got the lights being shined on me and people saying, how are you? What have you been doing? How do you feel about this? Has it worked? It's just about going there and taking clothes out and sorting through toys and having a purpose. So if you feel shy and you think you'll never go out again, a bit like I did and still do, is find other things to do where you've got a sense of purpose whilst you're there.
Yeah.
So whether it might be volunteering or it might be going to meet up with people you can talk to about stuff like that.
And podcasting. I mean, podcasting, writing for me is my healthier way of people pleasing. Yeah. I can still express myself. I can express my humour onto paper and pass it on and hope that it makes people happy. But I don't feel that, you know, integral need to make people laugh, only on occasion on Instagram. But I, you know, there's something to be said for doing things in a healthier way and making those changes. Yeah. And understand, like, it's a lot of self-reflection is going to go on here for the listeners, you know, to say, look, you need to look at yourself and try and work out who you are as a person, what you like about yourself, what traits you want to keep and what traits you want to change, and really have a look at that, you know, write them down, because that is a really good way of dealing with things.
And I think that actually goes back to what I was talking about being chucked out of the gym. I actually had to go through a whole ridiculous range of emotions from that one tiny experience. I had to accept, why do I feel like this? Because of this, because of this, because of this. But it was about facing those things that I usually wouldn't. So yeah, self-reflection is so true. How do we feel now though, Vic, that we've remodeled old traits and learnt new ones in sobriety?
Well, that's the thing we're talking about, isn't it? You know, we didn't realise that we're capable of change. And now I've got new traits, which is something that's really amazed me. My first one is obviously contentment. I'm so much happier. I'm content with who I am. And there's been a massive, like, unexpected journey into me. That's my first major thing about sobriety, is the journey into the self, which is totally overwhelming, but also totally fascinating. I'm now also much more aware of how my actions affected others in the past. I mean, we talked about hospital visits earlier. That was something I felt very embarrassed about after becoming sober, was the amount of time I'd taken up from ambulances and terrible hospital visits that I'd done various injuries while drinking. You know, I'm aware of that now. I'm aware that I was taking space for people who really needed it. And I feel terribly guilty about that. But at least now I'm much more aware of my actions. I'm definitely more conscientious. I get stuff done. I'm more responsible and organised. You know, it's amazing what you can achieve when you're not hungover. I think I'm kinder, I'm more aware of people's feelings, kinder to myself and others, and I'm definitely more authentic. My smile is genuine. My laugh is real. There's no fakery, and I'm really enjoying embracing who I am without the booze mask. I think it blocked my emotions really for many, many years. For 26 years, I wasn't really feeling emotions because I was drinking them away. And now I'm getting to feel those emotions again, and I'm starting to really enjoy it, even though it can be really confronting in the beginning. So yeah, there's loads of things that have changed within me, and they're all for the better, which is the positive note about sobriety, is that, you know, you do change, and intrinsically you change. Everything changes about you, and it's always for the better.
Yeah, it is. And I think the way that you're talking about those things shows that you're a lot further down the line of sobriety than I am as well. So I'll share my things as well, because I think this is, it comes from a different point. It comes from a place of having not spent as much time being sober, because I still find that a lot of mine are, well, I mean, we still got the same personality traits, but I've, as I mentioned before, I've learned to accept them and to learn to live with them. And that's a form of self-love. I love myself a lot more now. Self-love instead of self-loathing. Mm. You know, I'm still an introvert. That's a hard one for me. I really am an introvert, but that's okay.
And that's part of the process. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the process about learning who you are. And there's nothing wrong with being an introvert. That's kind of a misconception in the, you know, in the world, isn't it? There's nothing wrong with being an introvert. An introvert means you can stay at home, be cozy, have a cup of tea and not have to face the chaos. It's and perfectly okay.
I know there's so many people who do need to be surrounded by people, and I'm fine with people like that if that's what you're like. We all need different things to get by. And for me, it's about sort of being in my peaceful place, usually on my own. Yeah. Makes me sound sad, but I like that. I mean, I like to be with people as well. But, you know, I have to turn down invites. That's a really hard one for me that I've been struggling with, certainly over the last few months. And being able, and this is something Vic's helped me with, being able to say no, because I know that that's what's best for me, and I do have a right to say no. And some people might find that difficult when I say no. I find it difficult to say no, but it's about being honest and true to myself.
And you are very early on, you know, this is hard. It's a hard thing to do, to completely change your life like this in this social aspect. So it is hard, and you've got to give yourself a break and just go, look, I'm not going to go this time, but hopefully I'll go next time.
Yeah, there's no point putting yourself through it if you're not feeling confident enough to do it. And I think that's why, that's a really good thing about what we're doing now, talking about this, because I think mine are quite different to yours, because I'm still on much more of a learning curve. One thing I can say 100% is I am a better mum. I feel like I'm more present, I'm more connected, but I'm really enjoying being a mum. And when my two girls gave me their Mother's Day present last Mother's Day, I said to them quite honestly, and I didn't think about it before I said it, I said, I am honoured to be your mum.
Aww.
And I've always felt that way to some point, but I was never able to vocalise it because I'm just really enjoying motherhood.
I think we're definitely at different stages there as well, Lucy. I may be the one that's lacking behind there a little bit. My Mother's Day, I'm just happy if one of them hasn't done a shit on the living room floor, to be honest. That's my reward for the day. Thank you, children, for being kind to mummy, not tipping the Lego over or screaming in my face all day. Thank you. I'm happy to be your mother.
I hope you did get your husband to clean the shit up if there was one.
Of course. It's the only reason I married him.
No, yeah, maybe on different stages.
Different stages there. I'll learn to love them at some stage. Later on.
This is another topic that we talk about a lot, because I've got teenagers and Vicky's got young kids, and it's like, you know, which is the most challenging, and we're still competing on that one. But similar to you, Vic, I do feel like I'm more compassionate and more conscious in thought I've put here. So I feel I'm making decisions and thinking about them beforehand. And that's even brought out little things in me, like being more environmentally friendly and spending a little bit more time picking
flowers
in a basket and skipping the blue and white checked apron.
Yeah, ooh, weird.
Yeah, no, I tend to spend a bit more time choosing things for the right reasons, rather than just rushing around and making decisions and making choices just out of desperation to get through each day.
Right.
I stop and I think more deeply about bigger things, but also about little things. And when you do that, you're more likely to make the right decision. And certainly when you're single like me and you have to make quite a few big decisions on your own, having confidence in those decisions and giving yourself time to make the right ones is really important. It's something that I haven't done for a long time.
Yeah, because obviously your brain as well, when you're drunk to make big decisions, you're going to make or possibly the wrong decisions a lot of the time. Bad decision making. Yeah, so that was just something that would obviously change if you gave up drinking, was that decision making is going to be a lot much
better. I'm about to redesign my kitchen. Imagine if I did that when I was still drinking. God knows what it would end up looking like.
It would just look like a bar. Just with optics everywhere, in every cupboard.
I'm so glad I'm doing this sober. Another really, really important one for me is I actually feel happy
Yeah.
For the first time in a really long time, I'm not suffering from depression. Well, I am still a tiny bit, but man, I've taken such an upwards turn with my mental health.
It just shows there that that isn't an intrinsical thing that's within you. Like, you may suffer some depression, but alcohol was making it a lot worse.
It was making it worse, and it wasn't allowing me the time to do the other things that I needed to do. So now I go to the gym, I exercise, I meditate, and they're things that I need to do for my mental health. I can't do them when I was drinking all the time.
No.
So it allows me the time and space I need to look after my mental health without alcohol.
Yeah.
And yeah, just kinder to myself and less critical. And I mean, I just think whatever I'm doing, like, we were in a restaurant earlier, weren't we, Vic? And it's like, I'm going to have whatever I want off the menu. I can do whatever I want. I'm sober, for goodness sake. I've got sober. I've done one of the most amazing things and something I never thought I was going to be able to do. If I want to have a piece of toast with loads of butter and marmalade, I'm going to bloody well have it.
Yeah.
That will be my treat because I'm sober now. So just always remembering that win allows you to take away the guilt of doing other things in your life.
Yeah.
And that's really good. It makes life better.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's what the whole point of this podcast is, to really learn to embrace who you are as a person. You know, I think when I was drinking, I accepted defeat. I thought that was who I was going to be forever. I thought, well, I'm a drinker. This is my role. This is who I am. And in fact, that wasn't who I was at all. And I feel sad that I wasted so much time being somebody I wasn't. But I'm glad now that I've changed and I can be who I truly am, which is someone who is a bit, you know, a bit more of an introvert and, you know, all of these other things that I'm fully embracing right now. It doesn't mean to say it's easy to be who you are all the time, you know, especially in social situations. But it is possible. And Lucy and I are so similar, and we're both kind of proof that you can change your traits if you're not happy with them.
Yeah, or you can keep, even with the same traits, you can use them differently, and you can use them to your benefit rather than your disadvantage. And
accept them.
Embrace them and don't use alcohol to mask them, because if you do that, you're masking a part of who you are.
I think your shyness is cute.
Oh, thank you so much. And I think your rebelliousness.
Rebelliousness.
I think that's really rebellious.
Yeah, and exciting.
I do.
Gives me an edge.
Well, there was something you put down which I thought was really great. I think you took it off, but you said that you get easily excited, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. Well, now, what you were saying as well earlier, you were excited. What did you have? You went out with your daughter and you had coconut ice cream.
Oh, yes. I had a waffle this morning with my daughter and it had coconut ice cream on it. And I was enjoying it so much. The fact that I was out having breakfast with my daughter, it wasn't hungover, and I was just hearing the birds, enjoying her company. She's a teenager. I was enjoying her company. And I kept saying, oh my God, this is the best waffle ever. This coconut ice cream is amazing, to the point where she said, Mum, can you stop going on about it?
Oh, teenagers, don't let you have your say.
I was living in the moment. It was amazing.
Simple
it
things.
So much. I might go back and have another one. I'll send her a photo and tell her how much I'm enjoying
it. It's good to get excited over simple things.
It
makes life much less complicated, doesn't
it? Yes. It's almost as if your level and your need for that excitement once alcohol has gone has lowered a lot. So the little things are really, really enjoyable.
Yeah. So we've got some tips and takeaway, Lucy, like always. What have you got to say?
Yeah, so hopefully these will help our listeners if they're feeling that they've got similar personality traits or different ones, but they do want to try and change. We reckon that it's both interesting and helpful to recognise the personality traits that make you want to drink. In fact, in some cases, we believe it could be one of the many golden keys to sobriety.
We are all made up of a mix of characteristics which make us wonderful and unique, if sometimes a little troublesome. Although it can be hard, try and embrace what makes you you instead of masking it with shit tons of booze.
We're the first to admit that when it comes to coping mechanisms, alcohol can seem like the easiest and the fastest solution available. But we absolutely promise you that it is not the answer. It's actually the problem in a wicked disguise. Please believe us that this is the truth, and remember it next time you reach for a drink for any reason.
Try some of the tactics we've talked about to work through the personality traits that may have pushed you to overdrink, like making a list. Get professional help, and, you know, you deserve it if you feel that's something you want to do. In our experience, it does get easier the longer you are sober, because sobriety brings truth to the world. With truth comes acceptance. and from there everything travels uphill with the ease of a motorised bicycle. Oh, except your boobs, Lucy. If you have them, they'll continue their downhill spiral. Sorry, we can't help with that.
You're talking about my boobs?
No, mine. Wind socks.
Elephant's ears.
No, back to that's the why he was hosing me down.
Back to the elephant. Whatever the pesky alcohol advertisements might suggest, booze is not going to make you or your life better in any way. Never fall for it. And if you believe that it will on any level, remember this. Beliefs are just stories that we make up in our heads. So change your story and your life by not putting that drink to your lips.
So get to know you without the booze. Find out what your true personality traits really are once the ethanol has soaked from your skin. Lucy and I think you might be pleasantly surprised and actually like who you become.
And I just want to make a note that when we talk about an alcoholic personality, we're not suggesting that people with certain personality types are more likely to become alcoholics. This can affect anyone, a very diverse range of people with all sorts of personalities. So if we haven't mentioned your personality type, it doesn't mean that you are immune. The ones we've talked about today are ours and you will have yours.
But whatever your personality, if you're questioning, then it's time to get help. I've got a little quote.
Go on, yeah. Do your little quote. You love your quote.
I love the person I have become because I have fought to become her. And I think that's very true for both of us.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I mean,
there's satisfaction in that fight.
Yeah.
There is a satisfying thing when you are something and you become something else and you've put the effort, you've put the work in to become something that you've always wanted to become.
It's incredibly freeing.
Yeah.
I'd like to add that. Freeing's a good word for it.
And I just wanted to add, I'm going to add a song recommendation today because I was in my car this week and I put a song by Jimmy Cliff called Reggae Nights came on and it made me feel so happy. So if you're having a moment of doubt or sadness this week, put that song on because it is just classic and say the word jamming quite a lot because that made me very happy in a very good reggae voice. So.
Like we say, we're all different.
Yeah, and I listen to I Can See Clearly Now, but I changed the words to I can see clearly now the grape and the grain has gone.
Did you not have just said the booze has gone?
Yeah, but grape and grain in rams of rain. Well, get it, Lucy.
This is
welcome to my life. Oh. People not getting my jokes.
And you're meant to be a people pleaser.
I know, it's sad, isn't it? Oh, and I've got a book to recommend as well, of course. So High Sobriety by Jill Stark. This was Jill's book that she wrote about her year without booze. It's a best-selling memoir exploring Australia and Scotland's binge drinking culture, set against the backdrop of her own tumultuous relationship with alcohol. There's a link in the notes. I really loved that book. So, yeah, just it resonated with me. It might not resonate with you, or it might resonate with you, depending on where you are on this journey. But finding books that resonate with you is like the best thing you can do.
It really is,
It makes you feel really less alone.
Yep. And I've not read that book, so
yeah, it's a good one.
I'll add that to my list.
Yeah.
And we just want to make a point here. So I think it's important, as does Vic, to let our listeners know that even though we do laugh in this podcast and make light of our past crazy drunken behaviours, we don't want this to take away from how serious the normalisation of alcohol abuse is in our society. It has devastating effects on individuals, relationships and families. Vic and I are both passionate about helping others that are struggling and hope that our humour and insight into the life of two ex-binge drinking party girls will give others hope that you are not alone and everybody can live a full and happy life after alcohol.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good point to make because we don't want to make light of all of this. You know, it's not a jokey subject, even though we do joke quite a lot. So it's important to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
can I go home now?
Well, I thought we were just going to mention, we said that we might mention next week's or our next podcast.
Oh, yes.
So the listeners are thinking, oh, I can't wait for that
one. The intrigue.
The intrigue, yes. Yeah. So what was it again?
I can't remember. I think we're going to do something about being party girls, becoming mothers or becoming parents. So it relates to the dads out there as well, because we want to talk about that transition and whether that breeds this culture of drinking as a parent and whether that's okay or not. which is probably not. So no, yeah,
almost definitely not. Yeah, not in the quantities that we were drinking. No. But also, I think we try to include, we want everyone to be able to take something away from our podcast. So I know that some people aren't parents, and so probably but listen in, because there'll be loads and loads of interesting.
You probably will be parents one day.
And
yeah, there's something, if you can avoid drinking as a parent, it's probably the best decision you'll ever make. So
yeah,
positive impact. That's what we want to go for with that one. Yeah.
So I think we can finally. I think
like,
we finally.
Can I really go home? Can I go home now, please?
Oh, okay.
I'm really tired, and the kids will be in bed by the time I go home, so I can watch a bit of Netflix.
Go home and get into bed with your husband and fart all night long after your curry.
I don't know about farting. I think he's got that job pretty down pat. Right, onwards and upwards then.
Thank you for listening to the Sober Awkward podcast.
If alcohol is affecting your life in a negative way, you're struggling to moderate, or your hangovers are causing anxiety, it might be time for you to reach out for help. Contact your local doctor, a therapist, or connect with a local AA or sobriety group. In fact, Vicky's got a really great one.
Yeah, it's the Sober Social for Sober Curious Women. You can just search for that on Facebook. Lucy and I will both agree that even though this journey can be awkward, it's definitely worth it. And if we can do it, then you can too. For more support around sobriety, head to my website, drunkmummysobermummy.com. And Lucy runs an online space to support and inspire single mums. Find out more at beanstalkmums.com.au.
Finally, if you've loved the Sober Awkward podcast, don't forget to subscribe, rate, give a review, and share it with your mates. But don't worry, we won't be angry if you don't.
I might be a bit angry, Lucy.
Can't say that.
They won't mind.
No, it's just rude.
Hi there. I wanted to tell you about a podcast that I think every single one of you will benefit from. It's called Therapy Works, and it's hosted by me, Julia Samuel. I'm a best-selling author and psychotherapist. I invite you into my therapy room, where I speak to either a known or unknown guest. Topics range from the difficulties of divorce, a life-changing illness, to the struggles of motherhood. Search Therapy Works now, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
So, as you probably know, my comedy memoir, A Thousand Wasted Sundays, is officially out.
all my magnificent fuckuppery in one awkward hit. If you'd like to get your hands on a copy, it's now available from all good bookstores.
We always say all good bookstores, don't we? Yeah. Are there bad bookstores?
I don't know. It's probably ones with moody sellers.
Oh, yeah, really, yeah. Depressed librarian folks.
Yes, okay, yes, yeah, good. So there are probably some, but we're only storing it in the good ones.
It's only made it into the goodies.
You can also get it from all good online retailers. The print version and ebook are out now, and the audiobook will be available in March. I've been writing my memoir for 5 years. It will make you laugh, cry and cringe, and hopefully inspire a few people to reconsider their relationship with booze. If you love the podcast, then I think you'll love the book, even if I do say so myself. Hamish has read it. What did you think?
I feel like I know a little bit too much about you now, to be honest, Vic. Look, I really loved it. It was hilarious and surprisingly moving, but I feel like I've seen you naked in a literary sense. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's worrying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From an emotional point of view, seriously, it wobbled my teeny weeny wooden heart, Vic.
Okay.
My teeny little wooden heart.
Well, his teeny little, his wooden heart is broken. Anyway, so if you do manage to get your filthy mitts on a copy, please do me a favour and head to goodreads.com and give me a review. Doing that will help me get it out there to those that need a bit of sober support. So there you have it. My story, unwanted warts and all. Come and get awkward with me.
Not to be too demanding or anything, but seriously, go and buy it.
Yeah,
now.
Go and buy it. Go and buy it right now.
Yeah, don't just tell your friends. Buy it and then buy your friends one or two.
Yeah, yeah, don't give them a copy. Yeah. Buy it. Yeah.
And you know what? Don't be careful where you store it. If you lose it, you can always buy another five.
Yeah, buy another one.
Yeah.